activist show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Just back from the United Astrology Congress in Chicago, more on that in ensuing weeks, but where I was very often saying, oh, humans, oh, keepers of esoteric lore and arcane knowledge and much philosophy and the history of humans, you know, let us tease this into pertinence, into application. I like, you know, as one of my criteria, the world is on fire, and your point would be, not to reduce it. Somebody could say, my point is, I like planting flowers. And we go, good for you, but just keep it as a criterion. So more than perfectly at this dangerous time to be fully informed, you know, we are hosting Gary Lachman, who just his author page is perfectly great, is the author of many books. I have them, many of them, on the links between consciousness, culture, and the Western inner tradition, including Lost Knowledge of the Imagination, Beyond the Robot, The Life and Work of Colin Wilson, and The Secret Teachers of the Western World. We are now highlighting, it came out yesterday, Dark Star Rising, Magic and Power in the Age of Trump. And it is essential. I think it's essential reading. I do. I'm not inflating. I think it's one of the most crucial books to read now to understand where we are and how we got here. His website is garylachman.co.uk. And he is a founding member of the rock group Blondie as well. Welcome, Gary.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, a pleasure. Completely. My goodness. So there's so many places to go, and I loved your background. I think we want to feed in a little bit of background about what gave rise to Trump. Mm. And already you've helped me shift metaphors, because I've been to CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, to go speak with Dementors. And informed interesting conservatives too, and I did go to both conventions, and after hearing Trump speak, you know, the con man versus the liberating trickster, in which he was saying what you're saying, you know, he said, I will bring to you the greatest. Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. At this dark of the moon, post-apocalypse, new moon on Saturday, we're brewing and gestating. Dark of moon, when people gather to determine the course of culture over England, but not with a lot of humor, but still, we draw on all these things. So to you, you call Trump a chaos magician, which is, I think, just right. And however you want to jump in on that.
Okay. Well, I mean, the thing is, what I discovered when I was started to look at all this stuff,
regardless of extremely temporary age, race, and gender assignment, we know that the transit of Venus on June 5th, where she received full kind of solar woof, that particular image of the zodiac was woman activist giving rousing speech. And we say, well, perhaps that's the...
Our apologies for any confusion. We accidentally played last week's episode, but we're on track and we're playing the correct episode. Please enjoy Visionary Activist with Caroline Casey.
In conjunction at 2 degrees of Scorpio right now, its image is a house-raising party, building or raising a new cultural structure, shared projects, encouraging participation, working out interpersonal difficulties, phoenix-like reemergence from the ashes of empire, things falling into place. And we go, well, that's perfect. We say some things are always true, but there are times when they are even truer. You know, we know that part of what the divine is making available to us is Saturn with the sun, house-raising party, trining Neptune in Pisces, first time in 165 years, meaning it's greased lightning, focused, compassionate dedication, you know, glides right into the reality of the world, and it's forming grand trine with large dwarf planet Ceres Demeter, goddess of the Earth. So we know that we are magnetizing the desirable collective vision. I like to call it Qigong politics, meaning it is already happening on one level. So more than perfectly, it is my great delight to host our ally, longtime ally, Marianne Williamson. We are in different ways, but both dedicated to teasing the potent feminine spiritual into the molecular realm of politics. We're all invited to think of our lives like spiritual detective novels in which everything is a clue as to the unique medicine all of us bring to the work table. We know that one of the earliest words for Venus again, art, beauty, the feminine, was Venus Pandemos. Venus is all of us. Marianne Williamson is launching a great thing, completely timely, sistergiant.com, www.sistergiant.com, in which she says, these are very serious times and serious people need to be doing some serious thinking. The last thing we should ever do is allow ourselves to be infantilized by a counterfeit version of enlightenment. No true search for enlightenment ignores the suffering of other sentient beings ever. So welcome, Marianne Williamson.
Oh, thank you so much. I was so enjoying listening to you talk. You remind me a little bit of Jean Houston, and I was just kind of, it was wafting all over me. It was so marvelous. Thank you.
That's great. No, we're all in cahoots. And then just one last little astro tidbit I want to bring in before we fully convert. But, you know, we're on a waxing moon right now. The full moon is strong, and it will be at 6 degrees of Taurus. The image for that is the woman of Samaria at the ancestral well, healing cross-cultural encounters. And this is very potent for us to animate because so often it's not. In the Mormon massacre of settlers on September 11th, 1857, you know, Pluto was at 6 Taurus, healing water encounter, but it wasn't. They lured the settlers out by promising them water and then they slaughtered them. On the murder of Trayvon Martin, you know, Jupiter was beautiful overhead, if only they'd looked up, and Jupiter was at 6 Taurus, healing cross-cultural encounters. Well, that wasn't, but so it comes to us to restore the waters of life. So Marianne, I know you have many wonderful things brewing. I love sistergiant.com, and the graphics are fantastic. And guide us into, you know, politics should be sacred.
Right. Well, when Gandhi said that politics should be sacred, he obviously did not mean religious. But he did mean that the conversation that we have among ourselves about what we call political issues should come from the deepest parts of who we are. And right now, obviously, the political conversation that dominates the American landscape is arguably the shallowest parts of who we are. It is mean-spirited. It is toxic. It is shallow. It is simplistic. It is adversarial in the worst sense. And the heart, the deeper truths, the kind of archetypal truths that you were talking about earlier, which represent the highest dimension of our thinking, that which is our best kind of thinking, our best kind of reflection, our best kind of feeling and being, can't find its way into the political conversation today. And that makes those of us who are the most conscious thinkers, it makes us turn away from politics. It makes us say, I don't want anything to do with that. It's toxic. It's angry. It's everything I'm trying to journey away from. But I believe that that leaves us in a terrible conundrum. When you have 17,000 children starving on the planet every day, when you have 46 million Americans living in poverty, when you have America with the highest incarceration rate in the world or of any nation in history, when you have things like the Citizens United Supreme Court decision allowing financial interests to so flood our political campaign seasons that our democratic elections have become more auctions than elections. When you have a 23.1% child poverty rate in the United States, which among 35 developed nations of the world is second only to Romania, how can we say, well, I'm on a path of consciousness, so I don't go there? Because a path of consciousness is nothing if it's not a path of the heart. And how can someone journeying to love, journeying to the heart, ignore a starving child? So, you know, fortunately, we do not have starvation in the United States, but we do have serious hunger. And when you have the kind of starvation around the world, once again, 17,000 children a day on this planet, I believe that the soul of, you know, I think we have collective souls, just like we have individual souls. And America is not at this moment collectively standing up to the challenges and the invitation of history the way we have in our past, and the way I think that we as individuals certainly want to do. You know, on an individual basis, we're fabulous people. I mean, human beings are fabulous. But our fabulousness and our consciousness and all the ways that we are ready to transform so many areas, we can get into the conversation about education and about the arts and about medicine and about so many things. But we can't get in there in politics because the conversation is so sewed up. And I think we're all aware that this is absolutely perilous at this point in our history. And I think a lot of people would like to recreate the conversation, create our own conversation, a conversation in which the kinds of things you were talking about at the beginning of this hour are not seen as completely irrelevant, but in fact are seen as relevant to the major forces and dynamics that are affecting history. So that's what Sister Giant is about.
That's wonderful. And every word resonant and kinned. You know, the essence of ritual magic, largely the realm of women, was to intend and send, you know, powerful vision, as you are doing, into collective mind, into collective soul, so that it becomes available for psychic download. And it's why I like saying, you know, Qigong politics. So I think, you know, all that you say is completely true, and many people going, duh, the environment and the devastation of the earth and the child poverty and the incarceration and the repeal Citizens United, not mentioned until now. You know, and I think that what we have the opportunity to do right now is, you know, all that you said, and we can just tag you on at the end, you know, until now, we are wafting in. So it's a great opportunity for Radio Mojo and then on into your great event to magnetize the desirable collective vision about all the things you mentioned. Like, you know, and with the Qigong thing going, it is already happening on the level. So, you know, by 2016 or sooner, you know, let's see all non-violent, you know, incarcerated for drugs people released. You know, I mean, let's see that thing. Let's see a call going out, you know, that speaks to the best in people. I think that's what you're talking about, too. Whatever we speak to in others is what we're inviting to the dance, you know, so the good-hearted
joke. Absolutely.
Yeah, and Repeal Citizens United. So I love Sister Giant, because you say you're a cheerleader for women running for office. You want to transform the field. You know, this is very much Art of Peace. Wherever you want to go, but I know you have an event coming up in Los Angeles for Sister Giant. It will be after the election, but the election is ongoing. So what do you have planned for November 10th and 11th in Los Angeles?
Well, first of all, you mentioned the issue about women. In the U.S. Congress, Senate and House, we have fewer than 17% of our elected representatives are women. And on the level of state legislatures, we have fewer than 24% women. So without anywhere near gender equity among our decision makers, our political decision makers, how can we be surprised that our priorities are what they are? And I believe that women, because of our more relational perspective on life, would not leave children out the way that they seem to be left out. We basically now, in terms of how we behave as a nation, in terms of domestic and foreign policy, we use economics as an ordering principle. And I think that we should use humanitarian values as an ordering principle. It should not be, well, if there's enough money left, we feed the children. It should be, we feed the children now. It should be, we don't just wage, it's not, the question should not just be, how do we wage war? The question should be, how do we wage peace? The question should not just be, how do we make sure that those who already have money have enough to do what they want to do, but rather, how do we truly protect democracy itself so that everybody does have an equal voice in how our country is governed? I think that if more women were part of the electoral process, I think it could be argued that some of the balance on those issues would be addressed. So on November 10th and 11th in Los Angeles, we're having an event called Sister Giant, Women, Nonviolence, and Birthing a New American Politics. But by the way, Caroline, this isn't just for women. I mean, it does have this emphasis on women running for office, but I would hope that men would find this as important as women do. And people can participate not only by being here in Los Angeles for this, but through live stream. And I think, you know, in the days of technology the way they are now, you know, if you're live streaming something and you're able to, you know, send in your own emails and your own questions, you're really participating. So people can go to sistergiant.com. and find out how they can be part of this conversation. Like you said, it's 3 days after the election. And there's a reason for that. Because I think that no matter who wins, we really have to talk. And until the election, you know, everything is dominated by the conversation as it exists now. there's no recreating the conversation in any fundamental way before Election Day.
Although,
No, please go on.
No, I was just going to say, we hope it's after the election. I just want to try.
I share that concern with you. I share that concern.
Well, I want to put it on.
A lot of people do.
Yeah, I want to put it on our work table, because the astrology of the election is many things. And as you asked me backstage, I go, you know, if we could predict anything, we couldn't have a democracy. There's no fixed future, but there are invitations to animate the most desirable story. And on election night, Mercury, god of counting votes, stations and retrogrades at 6.04 p.m. East Coast time, just like it did on the election day of 2000. So we maybe the election returns from 2000 will finally come in. But as I said to you, you know, its image, Mercury's image, as it stations to retrograde, is an owl in an old oak tree seeing in the dark. So I want to invite all of us to be owls, and to invite the owls to be election supervisors, and for all of us to not leave things by default, but to, what would we like, you know, retrograde, revealed, rendered harmless, an occasion for mirth, anything up to no good, any rigging, you know, those horrible, you know, billboards that are up in black and Hispanic neighborhoods everywhere going, you know, voter fraud is it's punishable by whatever. I want to transform those into voter suppression is treason, you know, going, so it is for all of us. Yeah, so we hope your event, November 10th, the 11th, is after the election. May it be resolved. May it be, you know, any other RE words that you or our team can come in with about seeing in the dark. And of course, we keep this part of us alive, because, you know, election is ongoing. We're always voting for reality with everything we do, say, gather at Sister Giant. I mean, all of that. But I loved your saying also about transforming the field. You know, in the Art of Peace, it says, do not stare at your enemy's eyes. He will mesmerize you. Do not stare at his weapon. He will terrify you. Create your own field and, you know, magnetize that, and then you can sit anywhere you like. So I view what you're doing, what you've been doing for so long, and with Sister Giant, and what we're doing even right now, is we're magnetizing a field of, you know, actual equal democracy. And you mentioned also in Sister Giant that we want to participate in a renaissance of equal Mars Venus. We have hyper Yang Mars, you know, death frenzy out there, the balancing of the cool waters of Venus, and this renaissance with poetry and music to animate the desirable unifying story, which is so much a part of what you're putting out, going, because I saw at Sister Giant, you're going, everybody, welcome, you know, conservatives, Republicans, Democrats, whatever you call yourself, you know, toss your label into the whatever and come convene on a common story, yeah?
Absolutely. You know, the whole point of democracy, of founding this country on a democratic template, was encapsulated in the words Novus Ordo Seclorum on our dollar bill, on the Great Seal of the United States. The Great Seal of the United States has a picture, and I'm sure you're very aware of all this, Caroline, has a picture of the Great Pyramid at Giza. And in reality, the capstone of the Great Pyramid of Giza has been removed, and nobody knows exactly where it is. It's obviously, it didn't just fall off, because if it had just fallen off, it would have been found already in underneath the sands around the pyramid. Some people believe archaeologists will find it somewhere in the causeway between the Sphinx and the pyramid. But on the Great Seal of the United States, the capstone has been returned. Now, the capstone is where they had the blue eye of Horus, and the sun would shine on the gold of the capstone, and that's how people could see for miles and miles and miles where the pyramid was. Now, the metaphysical tradition holds that when the Egyptian civilization was in a state of decline, that Egyptian priests went up to the capstone and removed it. Once again, we know it didn't just fall off, or they would have found it by now, you know, if it had fallen right there. So they removed it, and they buried it somewhere. Still hasn't been found. But in the metaphysical tradition, that which is found beneath the sands of Egypt represents that which is remembered, the eternal, the myth of the eternal memory, the eternal return of the knowledge of humanity about its place in the universe. Well, our founders put on the Great Seal of the United States that the capstone is returned. That was their symbolism for what this country would mean, that the capstone, the highest level of knowledge, would be possible here. Novus Ordo Seclorum, new order of the ages. Now, we all talk about how we have free speech. So, yes, you can say what you want to say, and anybody can say what they want to say on the radio. That's great. But we need more than free speech. We need the free access to the elements of actual power and empowerment, not only in our individual lives, but collectively. And I think that that has always been the great political journey of the United States, whether it was abolition or women's suffrage or civil rights movement, people saying that the highest ideas that we have would not just be talk, that they would actually become part of the fabric of what was happening and how that would affect people's lives. So I think this is one of, you know, you were talking earlier, I love what you were saying earlier about the Kairos moment.
Yes.
I loved that, because that is such a powerful notion for right now, that if you have something to say, say it right now. That if you, and I think this is a fascinating time for people like us, because I think something has come around in a way that some of the conversation many of us have been having for many, many years that was so easily mocked and so easily marginalized and so easily trivialized isn't so easy to trivialize or marginalize at a time when the dominant cultural conversation is so obviously inadequate to the needs that face us.
Perfect. Yeah, no, that's great. No, no, and I love, you know, if you've ever looked on the back of a $100 bill, there's a watchtower there, a clock tower, and it gives a very specific time, 2:25 p.m., because there's shadows, so we know it's not at night. So there are many people doing different charts of America, but if you do the chart for that time, because, you know, the Founding Fathers pretty specific in their Masonic symbolism, you know, for 2:25 p.m., what it gives a kind of secret chart for America, you know, and its rising sign is 9 Scorpio, which is a fellowship supper reunites old comrades. It's very much what you're talking about, the beloved community, or quoting Martin Luther King Jr. saying, you know, our goal is to create a beloved community, and this will require a qualitative change in our souls as well as a qualitative change in our lives. So it's in there, you know, all these, I like to say cooperators are standing by, you know, in the invisible, there's all of this potency awaiting invitation. I think the part of the spiritual etiquette says the divine would like to help, would like to enter into the Kairos field of action, but requires inviting. And the invitation is a gathering like Sister Giant or our mojo here, or anything done that we add dedication to is an inviting, going, come on in, you know, and you know, beloved community, and say more, because you're so good on this realm, which is, we, you know, Americans, you know, have been shamed about their spiritual life into apologizing for the very thing they should be most proud of, and liberals especially. I do want to talk about liberals and conservatives, having done, you know, a fair amount of, you know, media off and on, and conservatives so confident they'll actually kind of listen and converse, but liberals have been so worried that daddy might not approve, that they might look silly for having a spiritual life, that they've been, you know, more stodgy, and then we might just say, until now. But is that something that you have noted?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that the left in America has become so over-secularized.
Yes.
Which one really wonders how this happened to the party that was Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King. This almost neo-Marxist way, and it really, actually, it is an anti-faith bias. They will respect it if it's in the African-American community, because the African-American community has never divorced progressive politics from the church. But everywhere else, and I've seen this in my own experience, it's like the left wing is quicker to roll its eyes when you start talking about spiritual issues than even the right is.
Yep.
So
until now,
well, once again, yeah, until now we're having a different conversation, and that's ultimately how change happens. You just, when you knock on a door and you knock on a door and knock on a knock on a door and it doesn't open, it's like, okay, I'll build a new house. And it goes back to that Kairos moment, that not only are new ways possible, possible, but some of the old ways will not be possible anymore. They just, they at a certain point, they lack chi, they lack vigor, they lack life force. Also, Carolyn, I want to mention this. I'm sure that this is something that you know, but all your listeners might not. Are you aware of the Grand Trine that was built in with the Election Day and the inauguration of the president and the birthday of the United States?
Well, remind me.
Okay. Well, the birthday of the United States, obviously, is July 4th. So then the founders made it so there would be a grand trine. They originally made it so that the inauguration of the president would be March 4th, and then the which is Pisces, and then the election, you know, the birthday is Cancer, the inauguration of the president was to be March 4th or Pisces, and the election day is always that Tuesday after the first Monday of November, which is always Scorpio. They did that on purpose because they knew astrology. Now, Franklin Roosevelt, who one can assume was not into astrology, said, well, we don't need to wait from November to March. You know, that was fine when they had, you know, a horse and buggy. We need to speed this thing up. And he was the one who made the inauguration on January 20th, which theoretically has thrown the inauguration of the president off. In terms of its connection to those things ever since then. But I thought that was just so fascinating.
Although you can't really you can't really escape it because every inauguration day is when the sun is at 0 degrees of Aquarius, which is the beginning of building community. So it's you can't. I do want to honor the soundtrack of the sirens behind you because it's kind of perfect. You know, we might say it's the wail of Persephone in the underworld going, whoa! You know, it's the alarm bell, and it's the sound of Venus Persephone in the underworld rising now. I just wanted to pay tribute to the sound effect of everything being kind of pertinent. But yes, all of that, you know, and just, you know, as a side thing, and we'll keep spiraling, but Washington, D.C., everybody wants a reason to love it, you know, and it's challenging. I do want to, you know, despite, you know, our team of progressives having until now been often running on the fuel of relentless chi-sucking snark, going, no, switch the fuel. That's a very gummy fuel, the preferred fuel of empire. It's a mean trick of the reality police to co-opt generous-hearted people into ineffectiveness. You know, we want to, you know, change fuels. But yes, there is this invitation. Yeah, my dad, as I mentioned backstage in an email, my dad, long before I was born, but worked with FDR, and was a New Deal congressman. So that's why I've sort of been trained to tease spirituality even to the intelligent and the political realms. But that realm, that was Eleanor. Eleanor, his fabulous Libran wife, you know, really encouraging so much. I mean, one of the talking points coming down now, you can see it kind of everywhere on Facebook. People go, well, Obama's no FDR. And we go, FDR was no FDR without the woman, without the Venus, without Eleanor. You know, and again, what are we going to, we discourage this, but encourage this. And maybe you can speak to the power of blessing that we have critique, like, yes, and then blessing. I mean, you're dedicated to blessing your entire life, really, right?
Well, yes. First of all, I need to understand, though, when you talk about the power of blessing, and I want to say, when I saw in your email that your father was a New Deal congressman, I thought that was absolutely fascinating. Where?
Third District, Massachusetts. He was the youngest of 13 Irish-American immigrants, only one to finish high school. You know, didn't go to college, went to law school, became charismatic young Irishman, was, you know, 54 when I was born after he was out of politics. But I did grow up, you know, in that realm. And something pertinent to, I think, what you're up to is that, you know, being kind of the youngest fairy tale child, I got to see power-possessing beings or control-possessing beings. And early on, all of our siblings, we were like, here are these men holding power, but their wives are so much more interesting. Early, we were like, we were disabused of the glamour of politics, going, these are dingbats here. And that's what I want to also kind of honor, that let us all now insource what we've been outsourcing. You know, let us gather to find a common story about what's desirable leadership. And I have been crossing borders and talking to CPAC and conservatives, and we go, you know, with true conservatives who say no empire, no preemptive war, We can invite in a common guiding story. We can jump in to that realm.
Well, the common guiding story, theoretically, is the synergy between high-minded conservative principles and high-minded liberal principles. That is, theoretically, the common guiding story. You know, Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, said the American mind at its best is both liberal and conservative. I think it's important for us, as a principle of living a conscious life, whether it's in politics or anything else, that we remember that nobody has a monopoly on truth. And part of what's weakened American politics is that nobody talks to anybody except the people that already agree with them. I find it horrifying how many people say, oh, well, let's not talk about politics, as though then we might argue as though that would be a bad thing. You know, we need to be able to get ideas out, just like in an intimate relationship. You have to be able to duke it out. You just need to duke it out, but keep it above the belt. And that's how we need to be with politics. We need to be talking to people who do not see things the same way we do, but with mutual honor and respect and rules of debate that do not hit below the belt. Because I know for myself, and I'm certainly left of center, I learn a lot. I learn as much from people, and I don't mean right-wing extremists, but I mean, you know, moderate conservatives, high-minded conservatives, even if at the end of the day I don't agree with a policy prescription that they represent. My thinking is always enriched if I can understand their views, even if at the end of the day I don't agree on the same policy prescription. You know, I have found in myself, as much as in other people sometimes, this kind of knee-jerk assumption that if somebody doesn't agree with me politically, that somehow their values are less, they care about children less, they care about peace less, and this has damaged us as a country.
We're going to take
damaged our politics.
Exactly. We're going to take a very short break right now. Our wonderful guest ally is Marianne Williams. I'm Caroline Casey, and we will be right back after a short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes.
We have been listening to a rebroadcast from October 25th, 2012. Welcome Caroline back. Cahooting with Marianne Williamson. If you'd like to listen to the entire show, go to kpfa.org. Thank you.
Marianne Williamson. She is brewing many effective things. Again, you know, pragmatic mysticism. Let us tease all of our spiritual impulses into making the world better for all, a wonderful life for the children of all species on this planet, may it be so. So yes, we were just there on. You were just invoking Eisenhower, and I just wanted to go. Okay. Also, my dad, New Deal congressman under FDR. You know, I was born on Eisenhower's birthday. Eisenhower sent me flowers when I was born. My dad was kind of booted out of politics by the Kennedys because at that moment, when I was being born, he was trying to persuade Eisenhower to run as a Democrat. Again, you're just going back to referring back to, you know, our rich and complex heritage where there, you know, somebody like Eisenhower, a Libra, an incarnation of Venus, befoibled as we all are, but leaving office with a warning about the military-industrial complex, you know, but was desirable to both parties. And as you were referring, you know, before, you know, I'm not sure if we want to duke it out. We might want to dance it out.
Right.
And you said, you know, hitting below the belt, and we go, maybe not, because do you know why women cannot testify? It's very fun, because it comes from testes.
Whoa, that's fascinating.
No, it's great, because literally it was men, you know, grabbing their balls and going, I swear by all I hold holy, you know, on this thing. So I like saying we can't testify, but we can ovify. Maybe you want to tease that out into your play there, too. I love the idea of ovifying. But yes, the you know, it is so clearly, you know, I mean, time for good-hearted people to, you know, assume narrative cultural lead, you know, with the critique, and I do want to come back to blessing, with the critique and then kind of magnetizing and animating the desirable guiding story that is all-inclusive, like, come on, team, we can all do this. You know, a wonderful life for all children, you know, inner cities blooming, you know, and starting with the vision more than how. It's when we start with how that people go to war. But starting with the vision really opens up avenues of possibility that weren't available before. Yes.
I think that that's why those of us who are on a path of consciousness and spirituality have so much to contribute, because we know that. You know, the American mind, characterologically, is good with a to-do list. Tell us what to do and we can do it. The Western mind, the patriarchal mind, says, just tell me what to do. and I'll figure out, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? But the feminine mind, the conscious, the more spiritually conscious mind, as you said, begins with the vision. And not only begins with the vision, but begins with the realization of the state of being we have to be in order for effective doing to result. And that's why I feel even about Sister Giant, it's the depth of the conversation. People say, do you have an action plan? You know, we always move into action plan, but until we have become the people we need to be, in order to do what we need to do, then even if we knew what to do, and we can't really know what to do until we are the people who would be able to do it, then jumping right to doing is missing half of the equation, the feminine state of being before the masculine state of doing. And I think that that goes back to what we were saying originally on the phone call, that the political conversation has become so shallow. You don't get shallow answers when you're only asking shallow questions. You don't get answers that are meaningful at all until you're asking meaningful questions. And that's why I think, and that's to me the question of vision, to really go deep into those aspects of and dimensions of consciousness through an almost meditative, kind of deep, reflective, and contemplative state, where we allow not only the sort of new brain, but the deeper, more ancient parts of the brain to really take in grief over what is happening, in order to open not only to the pain of seeing what's happening, but to the deeper waters of wisdom and illumination, I mean, that will reveal where the seeds of new beginnings really lie. And that's why I think women and those of us with a spiritual consciousness have such an important contribution to make. Once again, we should be the last people sitting out the great political questions of our day, because the old brain, the old left brain, analytical, merely, you know, sort of patriarchal, top-down thinking to do, you know, give me an action plan and we can figure this out brain, is literally inadequate to the challenges of our time.
Perfect. Yeah, because, you know, Nora Hall writes about, you know, wrote in the 60s that the crisis of the world and the potential death of species and planet, you know, is from the overvaluing of product over process, the exclusion of the feminine realm of dreaming and divining and wondering. And right now it says, you know, that one of the most practical things that we have right now is to wonder together. Because wonder, you know, even when we kind of throw up our arms in a beseeching kind of chalice of invitational inquiry, going, we wonder, you know, wondering together really attracts revelation. We wonder, well, oh, there we go. And that model of, you know, rather than action plan, it's a dedicated envisioning, dedicated dream plan that then magnetizes that it, you know, it's like the card game Hearts. I don't know if you've ever played that. But there's an important metaphor in there, which is to win, you can do this bold thing called shooting the moon, but you need the Queen of Spades and all of the hearts. And if you leave out even one, you lose worse than if you hadn't tried at all. And I think this is an important, you know, as we magnetize story, which is the invitation is we need everybody. You know, we need the imagination of right-wing golfers and inner-city kids, and you know, and if we leave out even one from the invitation, we lose worse than you know. So I think that's part of that dynamic to magnetize that, going, come on over here, come on, here we go. You know, everyone's medicine and ingenuity is invited.
Well, also, I think you really hit it with this idea, let us wonder together. You know that kind of John Gray prescription that a woman just wants to discuss her feelings, a man wants to fix it. I think that it is the strength of the masculine mind to want to come up with a way to fix it, but it's the strength of the feminine mind, and of course, ultimately, we're all masculine and feminine, to feel deeply what's going on and to, as you said, wonder. I love how in the book, Letters to a Young Poet, Rilke, the poet Rilke says, there are times when the answer is not obvious. You must live the question, live the difficult question. And I see that, oh, Caroline, I see the most beautiful things with audiences where, especially since 9/11, I think, Americans, I believe, have become more emotionally mature, more emotionally sober in certain ways. And when I'm speaking to audiences and subject like terrorism comes up and subject like abortion comes up and difficult topics like this, and I see a room full of people, and because of the tenor that we have planted in the room, they're not yelling at each other, they're not demeaning each other, but people are simply sitting there, sometimes with their head in their hands, obviously reflective, obviously thinking, obviously You know, you made an incredible line earlier in the call. You said something like, when generous-hearted people are co-opted into inefficacy or ineffectiveness, yes. You know, I always say to people, it's like the disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane the night before the crucifixion. When Jesus said, you know, they wanted to fall asleep. And from a metaphysical perspective, they didn't want to fall asleep just because it was late at night. They wanted to fall asleep because of what they knew was coming down the next day. It was too painful to be awake. And when Jesus said, can you not remain awake with me in the hour of my agony? That's what awake people do. Don't go to sleep. Don't go complacent on me. Don't go ineffective on me. Be awake and let us wonder together. And from that place of refusing to turn away from the pain of the moment, because this is a very painful moment. If your eyes are open, you're grieving. But if we will allow ourselves to hold the burden of that grief together, then the waters of spirit begin to run, and we begin to get the visions, and we begin to get the ethers of possibility that we otherwise would not have gotten. Once again, going back to this Kairos moment. You know, everybody's convinced that that which goes up has to come down again. Well, okay, but from a spiritual perspective, everything that goes down is destined to go back up again. And those of us who really get that, not only theoretically but viscerally, the morphic field and the resonant field that is created by enough of us, and there are, you know, there's your, you know, you said it before, there's your radio show, there's Sister Giant, there are a gazillion people doing the kinds of things you and I are doing, the kind of conversation we're having, and I think this is one pregnant moment because we're about to reach a tipping point, and there's going to be a wave of contribution on the part of the more transformational thinkers that could really change this country and help change this world.
I love that. I like inviting us all to feel that we are each of us an experiment on behalf, you know, conducted by the earth herself. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, when I'm doing astrology readings for, you know, women who are just so juicy in their 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, we go, and they're like, well, can I do stuff? And I go, yes, you are an experiment on behalf of the earth herself. When before in human history have we been allowed to know about really cool women kind of kicking butt and moving out there in their 50s and 60s and 70s? We go, well, never that we've been allowed to know about. So this is an experiment. I mean, again, we want everybody, regardless of, you know, age, race, gender assignment. But yeah, the morphic field, and you say so much in, yes, the necessary art of grief. You know, one of the friends of our show, Martin Prechtel, says, for lack of the art of grief, we go to war. You know,
that's right. Oh God, that's beautifully put.
Yeah, and that grief was kidnapped after 9/11 because it was blooming with grief, like the Vietnam Memorial, the streets of New York, with intimate, powerful grief that was a unifying, mm-hmm. constellating of profound,
yes,
community.
That moment of heartbreak.
Yeah.
There was such pregnancy in that moment, and then of course the government picked up on that and quickly went, no, just go back to shopping. We'll handle it. We'll bomb somebody.
Well, it's also where I want to go back to. I want to go back to blessing. One of the things that you know, I've been working on for so long is, you know, for all of us to critique, yes, you know, secular critic holds up a mirror and goes, look, it's terrible, it sucks, you know, terrible. Then the compassionate trickster within each one of us with a wave of the hand turns the mirror into a window. But look how beautiful it could be. And then with another wave of the hand turns it into a door. Let's go. And in working with people who were, you know, have been working on, you know, peace in the Middle East, and I was at a conference where people, you know, from many different Middle Eastern divergent backgrounds, Israeli military and Palestinian poets, wanted a conversation. And Neil Douglas Klotz, my colleague, said, these people are not ready for that conversation. I do this all the time. And I go, no, we're going to experiment, because the only frame in the conversation is people can say anything they want, and then they have a response ability to conjure a blessing that addresses the horrible thing they brought up. And people were, you know, people would say, the American people are so stupid. And I go, and your blessing? And they go, well, and I go, it doesn't have to be realistic. You know, every time people hear lies on TV, may a council of wise wolves surround them and, you know, encourage them to dream bigger. Well, anything. You know, but people got into it. And afterwards, Neil Douglas Klotz said, that was amazing because there was no poison in the room.
Well, sometimes also the blessing is in the is in your choice of words. I know when I'm counseling couples and when I'm counseling groups, sometimes I see my role, of course, is to protect the emotional safety of everyone in the room. So sometimes somebody will say something, and I'll say, Would you reword that, please? Can you make that same communication without the attack that you just made on the other? Can you get the same point across? Would you please reword this, relanguage this in a way that does not demean and that does not throw an attack energy? And it's amazing because you find that you could make the point as a blessing. Because sometimes if you just leave the attack in the air and then say, okay, now here's a blessing, you can actually relanguage to make a blessing. And the thing about the blessing also that I think is so important and that why your point is so important, sometimes people say, well, I mean, I didn't bless them. It's true I didn't do something proactively positive, but I mean I didn't do anything harmful. And we are getting to the point of realizing it's not enough to just not do something negative. We must proactively do something positive. Like, you know where you see this in politics? I hear people who are absolutely outraged by a Sarah Palin comment or an Ann Coulter comment or a Michelle Bachmann comment. We need to take the energy with which we express outrage at somebody having said something hateful. That energy should be used in saying something loving. The ultimate problem is not just that there are people saying such hateful things in the world. The problem is not that hate is so loud. The problem is that love is speaking too softly. And unless we ourselves are creating a politics of blessing, unless we ourselves are creating a politics of conscience, unless we ourselves are creating a broad-scale social force based on love, then there comes a time when it's almost like we lose our moral authority to complain about those who have created the opposite.
And then I just want to play with it because language is magic. We might say, without being Pollyannas, we might say it used to be that love was speaking softly until now. Where in everyone's heart now it is, because that's the Venus.
Yeah, I like your until now thing. You're right.
Right,
yeah,
until now,
yeah,
because it is magic. Sure. We don't want to keep affirming the whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That's the blessing part. So again, until now, and kind of resonating. But yeah, in different forms of trickster counsel, one of the things I like to play with is, you know, we're allowed to invoke, to bless, you know, anything of which we would be the happy recipients. So, you know, when somebody brought up, you know, Wanda Sykes jokingly saying, Rush Limbaugh wants Obama to fail, I want Rush Limbaugh's kidneys to fail, I go, no, we love Wanda, but a more fun trickster blessing would be, we would wish Rush Limbaugh's kidneys to work so well that it filters all the poison out of his body and leaves him in a pool of befuddled innocence. I mean, and you could do that for Sarah Palin or whatever. You know, may it be so, you know, that their hearts open and leave them, you know, in you know, joyful confusion. Because I think, you know, another thing I'd love to toss to you that I've been working on forever is that the oppressor, one of the secrets, the oppressor actually seeks the medicine of what he or she is oppressing. You know, England really needed the metaphysic of India. America really needs the beauty of cultural Middle East, which is such, underneath all of that roiling, all that hyper-yang Mars death frenzy, is incredible beauty. You know, may it go well for you. The casual conversation in the Middle East, in beautiful Syria before this, the waiter would say, you know, anything else, madam, the young boy, and you would say, salam tek, only your peace. And it's like, oh, that is so fabulous, as a weaving to and fro. But do you want to play with the idea that the oppressor seeks the medicine of what he or she is oppressing as an important mystery?
Well, as they say in AA, every problem comes bearing its own solution. So, yes, absolutely, by definition, what you are denying to someone else is what you yourself most crave. And one way or the other, the universe is going to get it to you. But even there, even though we need to look at our own shadows for exactly that reason, to find out what it is that we are looking for by denying something else to someone else, I think that sometimes, up until now, we have tried to figure out so much based on what our shadows are or based on what other people's shadows are. And at this point, it would serve us to move into a positive use of the power that we have. Sometimes, yes, we must admit our darkness, but other times we must also admit our light. Sometimes we need to work on getting the power that we have not yet gotten, but other times, and I think this is a time like this, we need to be thinking more in terms of what to do with the power that we have. And I think that everybody who's listening to this conversation right now would say, well, obviously, we're not oppressors, but it goes back to your idea of a blessing. Okay, you're not an oppressor. We'll all go with that, and you don't want to see oppressors. But are you proactively a liberator? Are you proactively someone seeking to solve the conditions of oppression that you see around the world? And I think that goes back to the Kairos moment, and I think that's the tweak. I think that's the shift in perception that is most necessary now, which is just a sort of cosmic way of saying we all need to really get off our asses.
Right, and see, I think part of the fierce and spicy, it's not goody-goody, you know, a fierce and spicy mm-hmm. blessing might be, for instance, you know, may each human have an increasing empathic experience of the effect of their actions on others.
Yeah,
and we go, would I accept that? We go, sure. So I think the oppressor seeking the medicine of what oppressing is not to stay in the dark. It's saying, you know, it's the wonderful, crucial term of complicity, meaning mm-hmm. not shame, not blame, but whatever's going on, we are complicitous, mm-hmm. and we can withdraw our chi, we can inhale our chi from the undesirable mm-hmm. and exhale it into the desirable. You know, I've met so many petroleum executives who love dolphins. They just love the ocean. They love what they're killing. And there is that, you know, we love nature. We're oppressing what we most love, you know, so we withdraw that and then really inviting in, you know, on all kinds of fantabulous levels. May the most moving aspect of nature, may nature's emissary, which is how all the great myths and the Grail legend starts, mm-hmm. the nature sends mm-hmm. an emissary to the court. Mm-hmm. May the customized emissary, you know, come to each, you know, colonizing human heart, you know, to awaken them to the beauty. It's like the whales in San Ignacio Bay when they were going to be, the bay was going to be destroyed by Mitsubishi, and the president of Mexico had approved it, but he went out with his wife and his son, and a friend who was a fisherman there said the whales knew what they had to do. They came up to that boat and they gazed into the eyes of the wife and son of the Mexican president, causing them to weep with the delight of the intimacy, causing the president to cancel the plan. You know, again, there are mysteries. It's not just us. I mean, I've told that story, but I still get weepy and goosebumpy when I say it, because remember, the whales did not come up and go, you imperialist puppet masters, you with your horrible colonizing idea, you know, which might be true. No, they came up with intimacy, going, gaze into the soulfulness of our eyes and be nourished by what you most want, which is this cross-species, you know, kinship. Because you know what the Dalai Lama said? You know, he only said it once when he first came to this country. A friend was there, and somebody said, well, what about, you know, Tibet's sucky karma? And he said, it's because of our terrible treatment of women. And he said, any culture that worships goddesses, its shadow is the suppression of women. Mm-hmm. And I think that's...
I see that even in our own higher consciousness community. I say it, there are a lot of men who go on and on about how they adore the goddess. The problem with real women.
Yes, I know.
The goddess means nothing if she's not channeled through human beings.
Yes, and we throw into the compost bucket, you know, the witty irony of men competing to be more feminine. Or we will be the voice of the feminine for you. We go,
we can do it if you would let us, guys.
And so it's also why I love the language of Venus Mars, because in the esoteric tradition, women Venus externally, Mars internally, men Mars externally, Venus internally, and myriad forms of cross-gender, you know, experimental hybrids. But just that idea of what we really want is the equal collaboration. I mean, all the myths say when Mars left unsupervised, Mars is sticking mackerel genes in the tomato. Mars needs Venus. It's the round table, the Arthurian court, where it was the art form of positive woof to protect life. You know, and the positive hero, the positive Mars, is a fierce, you know, ardent defender of life, and just to reanimate what we are inviting heroism to be, and the whole erotic model thereof. Yeah.
Well, I think that there are so many ways that these conversations are coming up. I think there's so many ways that these conversations are feeding all of us with the kind of insight that we need. And, you know, truth is one. But I think that for people like you, people like myself, people like those who would be listening to this, it's such an exciting moment because we can cross-pollinate. We can fertilize one conversation with the wisdom that comes out of another conversation. And that these categories, you know, the categories themselves are being broken down. That wisdom comes from many places in the brain. Wisdom comes from many places in the heart. That right there has to do with the feminine voice. You know, it's not just above the neck. It's how we feel. It's words like tenderness. It's words like feeling and emotion and even grief, like you were talking about before. The dominant political conversation doesn't include words like grief and compassion. And so I'm feeling very excited by the possibilities of this moment, and I think that Sister Giant is really dedicated in my mind to being an incubator for a conversation which takes these issues of consciousness and these issues of politics and sort of plays with them in that state, like you were saying, of collective wonder. I'm going to say to people at the beginning of Sister Giant, and once again, people can go to sistergiant.com and find out how to register. I'll be saying, just let this experience waft over you. And don't be thinking, okay, when we leave here, we have to do this. You don't have to do anything. The most important movement I'm looking for is the movement inside our heads. And the movement inside our hearts. You know, just even like you were talking about the trickster and talking about astrology and talking about the archetypes, isn't it just amazing that we're living at a time when so many people even know what you're talking about? When so many people, like for us, that's like, oh yeah, we get that. And then can talk about that on one hand and talk about child poverty on the other hand and not feel like we're in two different universes, but rather really get the way they blend together. I mean, isn't that kind of exciting?
It is. It is the realm of pragmatic mysticism, and it is
exactly pragmatic mysticism.
And it is the realm of, you know, the 60s Uranus Pluto conjunction, now the Uranus Pluto square. This is the first quarter of integrating the seeds that were of esoteric availability as well as political consciousness that were beginning to diaspora in the 60s, and now we really implement it. And then just briefly, I want to do a shout out to the young girl in Pakistan, now recovering in England, Malali, who was shot, young, outspoken girl, again, power of the earth, and the women in Pakistan say nothing has unified that country, you know, as much as Malali's story. Only the earthquake was equal. So a young, outspoken woman is equal to an earthquake in the social force of now. But but anyway, thank you so much, Marianne Williamson. I aspire to be, you know, increasingly in cahoots. I love what you're doing. And again, sistergiant.com for your events. And anything else you want to say?
Thank you so much. And I want to join with you about Malala from Pakistan.
Yes.
Here is a 14-year-old girl who told truth to power. She told the Taliban, I deserve to go to school. And I think American women want to really look at that.
Yes.
If a 14-year-old girl in Pakistan would tell truth to power to the Taliban, certainly we could do more than we're doing.
Exactly.
And I think there's some healthy shame we feel when we look at what some of these other women in the world are doing.
And we're on our way out. And we just say, you know, even more, just changing one word, speak truth, be power, which is certainly
what
she did.
Caroline, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. That is Marianne Williamson. We love her, sistergiant.com. You can find out more there. You can follow me on Twitter at StandUpCoyote, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. New website is up. Woof, woof, woof. And we will reconvene next week. And again, thank you so much, Marianne Williamson.
Thank you, Caroline.